There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And just a quick reminder that, like we talked about, just gave away some tickets to the Joy of Life Ball. That is the benefit of St. Jude. Of course, your king and queens this year, one king and two queens of the ball this year, are local children that have had treatment at St. Jude. And their stories are amazing. They're really great kids. They've been in on the show already this year, and I'll get to see them in just like a month from now at the ball. And I hope we get to see you there too. I'm back on emceeing it along with Nicolette Schleisman from Channel 5. So make that a to-do list. Go look at joylifegulfcoast.org is the website, or just look for St. Jude in our area and you'll find the information on that ball. Love to see you out there. It really is a great place. And of course, it is for a great, great cause. Good to get Aaron Beasley back on the show, Executive Vice President of the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. I've been talking about this interview for the last couple of days, so it's good to hear from Aaron. Good to talk to you.
Sean, great to be back on. Thanks.
Yeah, and I guess before we get started, Alabama Cattlemen's Association, who are y'all?
Well, we're a trade organization for the cattle industry in the state. We represent around 10,000 members across all 67 counties. And, you know, the thing that I tell people, the most important thing that we do is that we serve as a watchdog for the cattle industry in the state. We lobby on behalf of cattle producers, lobby for good legislation. We lobby against bad legislation and just really look out for our producers' ability to continue to farm.
Okay, and let me do this too, so because this is the new thing, and I would do it anyway, but it's a new thing. So in full disclosure and transparency, I am a member of the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. So there you go. All right. Before somebody goes, I found you out, Sullivan. All right. A lot to talk about here. Subject that you and I have talked about a couple times through the pandemic, and let's just start there at the grocery store. The price of beef. We're looking at ground beef. We're looking at steaks, other cuts. People are like, my gosh. Even had the president talk about how much, you know, beef costs the other day. I don't know if he does his own shopping, but where are we right now as a country?
Well, I mean, obviously, onset of the pandemic, beef prices shot through the roof. And unfortunately, today, we're still seeing that same situation. The only difference today is that every other commodity and everything else that you buy for your house, your office, whatever it may be, is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Prices are through the roof on everything. Inflation is taking a toll on not just our industry, but everyone. And so, you know, we're seeing increases from all the way from the store back to the farm for input costs, and that is directly reflecting the price of beef. Now, we also have the packer situation, which, you know, they do have the leverage and have had the leverage, as we've talked about previously on this show. The good news is that for the cattle industry right now, kind of the pendulum is swinging back in favor of cattle producers. We're having a decreasing cow herd. We have information that more packing plants are coming online in the next 2 years. We're going to increase what we call our hook space to be able to harvest more animals. All these things are going to really capitalize on our ability to have leverage, which is a thing that we've lacked the last 2 to 3 years.
That's for sure. And for people to understand, I know these percentages can move, but for what somebody, you know, there's no other ingredient. You know, it's not like there's other ingredients. When somebody is buying beef in the store, it's not like there's the ingredients cattle in that. So there's no other ingredients there, but the percentage of money that comes back to the cattlemen, the ranchers, the people, the producers here, is 30-something percent. I mean, people will say, oh, y'all must be making it back 2 years ago. Y'all must be making a killing. I just paid X for beef in the store, and back then it wasn't. Yes, thank goodness the pendulum's swinging back, but you just talked about the input costs for those producers are coming up just as much.
Certainly, they are. You know, that's the fallacy in this whole thing is that we're finally kind of celebrating the fact that leverage is there, and, you know, you're seeing live cattle prices inch up. Problem is that inputs now, fertilizer, feed, all these things that we rely on to raise cattle, they're skyrocketing as well. And so, you know, it is a huge problem. You know, it's unfortunate. I get told all the time, like, man, your producers must really be making a killing. And I have to just sit down and talk to people and say, hey, look, you know, two different commodities we're talking about. Producers sell live cattle, packers sell meat. Those mm-hmm. are two different things. And, you know, they have taken advantage of the situation, and beef has been through the roof. And cattle have not been in line with where they need to be. And, you know, something that I always have in this conversation with different people, legislators, consumers, producers, whoever it is, the average producer is not looking to you know, just get the whole piece of the pie. Everyone, you know, the mm-hmm. pie is one size. All we want is everyone to get their fair shake at it.
Yep.
That's really all anybody's asking for. And right now, in what we've seen the last couple of years, that's just not been happening. And so we've been trying to be proactive in that, you know, trying to look at ways that we can help this situation. We obviously are not a packing state in Alabama. We're a cow-calf state. We're a stocker state. And but we do know that there's some things that we can do. We have a lot of producers that have been looking a lot at direct-to-consumer sales. We know that there's a need for more small meat packing in the state, which is not going to have hardly any impact, significant impact, on the packing sector as a whole. But what it will do is provide more marketing opportunities for our producers. And so we recently commissioned earlier in 2021 a brand new feasibility study, an economics feasibility study with Auburn University, to look at, you know, what can the state handle in terms of small meat processing. And so that full 60-something page report is available on our website now. It was funded through the State Beef Checkoff Program, and it's a great resource. It looks at, you know, what will it cost me to build a 35-head a week processing plant? What is the consumer really wanting right now? What do producers need? They did a survey on producers, and a lot of producers said, hey, look, you know, I think I want to look into doing that. I'm interested in it, but I may lack the facilities. I may need some more education on how to feed cattle. You know, it's a big difference feeding a calf to 800 pounds versus feeding cattle up to 1,200 pounds plus. So we've really identified some great opportunities in that study. I think that we can help as an association with, you know, whether it's the labor challenges, whether it is education, looking at different ways that we can maybe use some of these funds that are coming to the state for the cattle industry. I think we have a lot of opportunity there, and all that came about because of this pandemic when it's all said and done.
Yeah, that is true. As a silver lining to this, I wonder on the small scale meat packing, because I guess, let me back up a second for people that didn't catch it when we talked about it at the beginning, that the situation, and correct me if I have my percentages off here, but it's four packers control essentially, what, 85% of the packing market in the U.S.?
Is that's accurate.
Okay. So, which is, you could talk about whether that's, you know, a fair market or not, but also I think the pandemic did shine a light on it, just as food security, right? Something happens and they have a COVID outbreak or whatever in one or two of those packing houses, they're now offline. I mean, that's pretty dangerous to have all your eggs in one basket.
Absolutely. And you know, that's what we've continued to see. You know, every industry is dealing with labor challenges right now. That's no secret. Same thing goes for the packing industry. And when they don't have people showing up to harvest animals to cut meat up, it has a direct impact not only on the live cattle sector, but also on the consumer and their ability to get product. So, you know, you have seen at the federal level just in the last couple of months, and really this week, we saw a large, you know, a big announcement from the Biden administration. They're funneling a lot of money into processing. They're funneling money into trying to help with the labor challenges across agriculture, because it's not just at the packing plant. You know, there's labor challenges at you know, plants that produce whatever input that you need on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
There's challenges there. There's labor challenges on the farm level. You know, we've dealt with that for years now. And so it's across the deal, you know, but I do think that there are some very good efforts in place that we're seeing. There's a lot of legislative action that I think is positive for the cattle industry. I mean, they're talking about, you know, $875 million being put into trying to expand meat processing in the country. That's pretty significant. I mean, they've put some numbers in there. You can kind of look through the fact sheet and see what they're wanting to do. And there's just a lot of effort to try to put more options out there. You know, swing leverage so that it's not just all in one basket, which currently we've had all the leverage with the Packers. So, you know, I think all of these are going to, you know, just kind of fold on top of each other and really help in the long run. And at the same time, the industry is going to kind of self-correct itself a little bit too. And so, you know, it is a silver lining. You mentioned that earlier. You know, we've exposed a lot of challenges. We've exposed a lot of needs. And where the association comes in is, all right, how can we insert ourselves and try to, you know, serve as the conduit to try to, you know, fulfill these needs that are out there.
If you're just joining us, talking to Aaron Beasley, Executive Vice President of the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. Aaron, you know, with this move in Washington, that's one of the things that prompted another call to you on this. They talk about the money being invested, but if they use it, I think the solution, I think you probably agree, like you just talked about here in the state, is just more options for meatpacking, just meaningful competition. If we let the market, if we have enough competition, then that'll, like you said, it'll self-regulate. As if you have, you know, local, regional, and then a national level in packing, I think that then one part will go to fill the need and the price will regulate.
It will. You know, the biggest thing that we need is more large packers, though, when it's all said and done. We need more packing plants that can harvest large numbers of cattle every day. And when I say large numbers of cattle, I mean we need to be processing an extra 5,000 head of cattle a day in this country. What that will do is provide more options for those that are selling fed cattle out of the feed yards. And when they're able to do that, then that should trickle down to our producers that are producing those calves that are selling as feeder calves. And all of that will help to really, where we've kind of had these, like, out of whack scenarios within the industry. If we have more options available, then it should help to stabilize everything and not have so much volatility. We've dealt just a tremendous amount with volatility. Now, at the local level, yes, small meat processing is something that fits into Alabama. There's a lot of, you know, we have a handful of producers that, you know, that is their niche, is that they produce beef for local direct-to-consumer sales. And so, you know, I know for certain, I can't say who they are, but we have definitely been in conversation with at least two people or entities that are going to be building, you know, additional small plants. Good. In this state. It's Good. Great news for the state. It's fantastic for our producers. It gives more options out there. But it's just what you said. The more options out there that are available, it makes it better for everybody. It doesn't matter if you're producing a feeder calf, if you're selling a calf at 500 pounds to go on to a stocker producer, or if you're selling beef locally to the consumer.
Erna, let's talk about this as we talk about the supply side of this. I see some of the text asking about this, and of course it was on my list to talk to with you about, and that is on the supply of beef coming into our country, not American ranchers, producers, coming from wherever, South America, coming from Australia, wherever, coming in, and they're changing the origin label. Right, this where if it comes in and then they repack it or something at a packer, they can sell it as USA or USA beef?
So it was discovered in the last couple of years that there was beef being imported, which we import about 10% of our product to meet our ground beef demands. That's no, you know, hidden thing out there. But we did discover that, and when I say we, I mean at the national level there. It was discovered that beef was imported in, and if it was, let's say that it was ground and processed into ground beef, that it could be repacked and product of the USA could be put on there. So we actually are working with USDA and FSIS to get some changes in there so that because that label is not, that's not a clear label.
No, so I mean, they bring,
when someone buys product to the USA, they want it to mean that. So that needs a different label. That's certainly going on. There's a lot of beef that's imported and repacked or, you know, turned into ground beef, whatever it may be. But we need to have a clear label on there so that the consumer knows exactly what they're buying.
Right. So, I mean, the way it was working before, I mean, here comes, you know, a side or whatever from Uruguay, whatever. And then if it's ground into, it comes in, that's Uruguay. But as soon as it's ground and it could be resold then as a product of the USA.
Yes. If it was processed at a facility in the USA.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, semantically, maybe that's right because the product was the ground. But, I mean, come on. That's not what people thought.
I guess because the product was produced in that case in the USA. But, you know, there's a movement for that to be repacked and called processed in the USA. I think that's a little clearer there. Because, you know, if a package of beef has an American flag and says, mm-hmm. you know, made in the USA, whatever it says in the USA, obviously most consumers and myself would assume that, okay, that's from... You know, they're straight from a steer that was processed,
right.
Raised and processed in the USA. And so, yes, I think, you know, certainly we need more clarification there. You know, it's funny, these things, I mean, that was actually, I actually think it was the Oregon Cattlemen's Association that brought that forward. I remember the national meeting I was sitting at, and they brought a resolution forward with that. And, you know, a group was formed to study into that. And I'll be danged if they didn't figure out, yeah, that is what's going on. So, you know, all of a sudden, association gets to action. And in this case, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, they go to work and try to, you know, figure out, okay, how are we going to make this clear? How can we change this so that it is clear for the consumer, clear for anyone else who's buying the product?
Well, hopefully we've done this, and this turnaround here on prices is in the nick of time, because what we don't need to do, and, you know, this is, you would think as a producer, I'd want fewer people, but I want, you know, more people. On the producer side in our state. You know, I don't want to have it in the hands of fewer and fewer people, because that leads to a lot of issues. So I think the number of cattlemen in the state is a good thing for all of us.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, we, you know, agriculture is the bread and butter of Alabama. It's the number one industry in terms of economic impact, and beef cattle is one of the top three commodities produced. So it's extremely important. I'm very proud of what the association is able to do. You know, when the crisis first started, you know, we were right there. We were directly involved with making sure that producers were receiving payments that were, you know, to try to help them where the market crashed and their mm-hmm. cattle were not selling for anything. We were right there to get some assistance for them. And we'll be there every step of the way, no matter what's happening in the industry. So right now we need to focus on, you know, what are the needs? How can we help? And I think that we'll continue to do that, and we will do that in the future as well.
All right. And y'all also, while you're at it in the research department, let's figure out how we can keep the fertilizer prices from going any higher. This is crazy.
Oh, so, gosh. It's the input right now, whether it's fertilizer or feed costs, it's just through the roof. We, you know, we're working on our hay field right now, and we're feeding cattle at our place, and it's amazing how much everything's gone up. But, you know, I talk to other people in other industries, and you know what? Everybody is dealing with that issue right now.
Well said. All right. People want to get more information about the Alabama Cattlemen's Association and what y'all are doing. How do they find you?
Yeah, just hop on bamabeef.org. And like I said earlier, a copy of that 60-something page feasibility study is on there if anybody wants any good light bedside reading.
That's what I'm going to be doing. Aaron, as always, I appreciate talking with you, and we'll get you back on soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Sean.
All right. Aaron Beasley, Executive Vice President of the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. And we'll be right back with more Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. I got the news and Dr. Bill's forecast for the weekend coming up in just a second here. And we'll get back to your calls and text at 343-0106. I'll say this text here from D on the text line. I bought beef directly from a local farmer. I found it on their website. Great process, great beef, and a great price. You know, there's a couple of people listen to this radio show that do that as well, that they've sent me some Facebook links to theirs. I think that's a great way, too. I think you have the big processing, because it has to handle the fast food demands and the demands all over the country, and I get that. Then you can have regional players, some packing houses here in Alabama, and then the farm, I mean, how big is, you know, farm to table, right, when it comes to fruits and vegetables and all that stuff? It should be the same for the protein, for the beef or other meat products. You should be able to have those options. It should be viable, you know, as a way that a consumer gets a good product for a good price and the producer makes enough money to keep the farm going. So I think that's a great thing, Dee. More of that, the better. The more, because, I mean, the fact that four packers controlled 85% of the market, think about that. You get in pandemic times and what happened, and they shut down, you know, they shut down two, and then there was a fire at another producer. And then you, so not just in the profit question here, which is something, but just in the food, you know, the food safety, the food production, it's really important. All right, we'll run and get an update from the news and Dr. Bill, then we'll come right back. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah. Right, 136 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Y'all say hello to my friend Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, Sean. Hey, everybody. How we doing today?
Man, it's a beautiful sunny Friday, and people are hopefully going to get out, maybe come see you this afternoon or tomorrow. I'm always talking about the things that we can buy from y'all, like precious metals and great jewelry and Opendale knives. There, I threw it in. But also, y'all are in the business of giving appraisals and buying from us.
Well, we are. You know, a lot of times we have folks in the area that, you know, somebody in the family has been collecting over the years, and that could be a coin collection, gold and silver bullion. That could be a ginormous pile of jewelry. We've seen all of those types of things. Well, unfortunately, they pass and they leave all this stuff to their heirs, and then we're all sitting there holding the bag going, okay, I know this stuff is worth something. You know, Grandpa said it was worth a lot of money. Grandma said these were very rare, expensive pieces. How do I go find out what the stuff is really worth in today's market? Because goodness knows, you try to go onto Google, and it's going to blow your mind, both good and bad.
That's for sure.
Come by the shop. Come by the shop. Talk to us. We'll go through the items with you. It doesn't matter if it's one piece of jewelry or a huge collection. We do those appraisals for free, no charge whatsoever. And if you do decide you want to sell some of those items or all of those items, we're here to help you out.
Hey, and on the buying side here, you know, we talk about gold, we talk about silver. We're also talking about something that doesn't deal with sales tax. Kind of explain that to people.
Yeah, so if somebody is looking at buying some gold and silver bullion, some rare U.S. coins or currency, there is no sales tax on that anymore in the state of Alabama. So you're taking some money out of retirement, maybe out of savings, and you want to convert that into some gold and silver, and you're worrying about tax penalties. There are none. So you're taking that money out of cash, converting it into gold and silver, and there is no more 10% penalty on that. You can come into the shop, buy $1,000 worth of silver or gold, and walk out the door with $1,000 worth of silver or gold, no added 10% penalty.
You know, I love to listen to y'all talk about precious metals and collectibles and just the world at large, too. And I want people to listen, of course, to the airing of Two Guys and Some Change here on FM Talk 106.5. But y'all got it in a podcast form. So if somebody wants to listen while they're, like, walking around the yard picking up limbs or whatever it is, they can do it that way.
Yeah, they can check out the website, twoguysandsomechange.com. And we've had people listen to the show on every Tuesday night right here on FM Talk. But they missed something, mm-hmm. You know, the dog started barking, the kids did something, and they want to listen to it again and pick up on what they missed. And that's one thing the website is great for, Sean.
All right, we can do it there. And if somebody in what is IRW, in the real world, how do they find you there?
Yeah, Midtown Mobile, 2204 Government Street. We're in between Whataburger and Little Flower Catholic Church. Come down and say hey. Online, mobilebaycoins.com.
All right, Angelo, we'll see you soon.
Have a good one, my friend.
You too. Angelo, check it in for Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. I think I told y'all this before, maybe last week. Like, Angelo's a renaissance man. Like, I've been getting his tips on doing, like, corned beef. Like, he does his own corning. of like corned beef or whatever other beef. Like he does, it's really cool. Like I thought it was something that regular folks couldn't do, but he's like, oh no, no, this is how you do it. So it's like a, it's one of the many things. But Amando's gold and silver and collectibles, and also had a corned beef, which is it's a cool thing. When I finally get the guts up to do it, I'll put some pictures up on social media if it looks good. All right, to the phones at 343-0106, and Freddie is in West Mobile. Hey, Freddie.
Hey, Sean, I was just calling to, I read an article in Lanyap who does an outstanding job of covering everything Mobile. I think that's one of the best things the city's got going forward is Lanyap. But
yep.
That said, he wrote an interesting article about annexation by legislation. And this is something as a part of the West Mobile Annexation Committee that we were aware of from our discovery work, and we decided early on that that would be too difficult a task. Now, I don't know, Mr. John Gray, who did with the Research Center that he's with, suggested that, and we don't think that that would ever be possible because, for one, the legislative delegation would oppose it heartily, and I'm talking about both sides. So I don't think that's something that would be within the realm of possibility. That said, we're still forging ahead. Our group still exists. We're still working towards the goal of getting a referendum out here, which is one of the other ways that you can have annexation. So we're working toward that goal, and we'll be having information and meetings in the coming weeks leading up to the mayor's announcement. So,
does your group represent? Group represents the people inside the proposed annexation areas. Is that who y'all represent, or how's it dictated?
Yeah, basically, it was the group that was when Commissioner Jerry Carl was commissioner. That was largely an area that didn't have a fire district and wasn't inside the city limits of Mobile. So, yes, we're largely the subdivisions that are essentially west of Cody Road and north of Cottage Hill up to, say, Hit Road. So, and then, we're those people and have decided that annexation is by far our best solution to a number of problems that we faced. And then we also think it would be beneficial to the city of Mobile for some of the issues that they face. It would increase their revenue substantially.
So, Freddie, and another part of this I read Dale's story there. You could do it legislatively, and the option we've talked about so many times is that the Mobile City Council would vote to allow a vote for those areas to come in. Did you say there was a third option that you could get a referendum from outside to ask the city, or did I misunderstand that?
No, there's a third. The third option. There's three ways to be annexed. The first option is we talked about it, which is Dale Leach's article by legislation. The second option is what we're trying, which is by referendum, and then the final option is by what people call abutment. You have to be right next door to the city limits.
Okay.
But you have to have 100% of the people vote to let that happen. So you have to have 100% participation in the subdivisions out here. While we have strong support, we don't have 100% support.
Okay, because if it went the other way from the city, that they would say, okay, you got the right of referendum on this, it would just be a majority vote to come in. But if you wanted to do this abutment, then you'd have to have 100%.
Right.
Okay.
And so, that's what, back when the formal council members there, a number of them said, well, I voted to allow this annexation last year. Well, what they were referring to is what they did is they just about to accept the 100%. Now, they're only talking 50 homes, too. So, I mean, the impact of population was minimal.
Okay. Well, thank you for the update. I learned something new there. So we'll watch this. I mean, I was thinking this was something that would be coming up in January or February. Have you heard anything to that effect?
No, not anything to that nature. We're kind of listening to what the mayor had said in his 100-day plan, mm-hmm. and we look for something to happen before the 31st of March.
All right.
And that's the 31st of March is kind of the end of his 100-day plan, so we're working toward that. But we want to be ready, and what we want to do is we want to educate the people that we probably failed the last time, which were the people in the three districts that voted against us. So I don't think we did a very good job of informing those people what we would add to the city.
Do you have a plan to do that? You're rolling out that messaging?
Yeah, we're working on that now.
All right, very good. Freddie, I appreciate the update, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, there he is. All right, yeah, that's a subject that we definitely is on the to-do list to talk about here in the new year. That's for sure. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Joe Dennis from Taylor Martino joins me as we move on this Friday.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Also online, FMTalk1065.com. And a new guest from a name that you know, of course, Taylor Martino Rowan. And the newest kid on the block with Taylor Martino Rowan, Joseph Dennis, joining us now. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean. I appreciate it.
I want to talk about this. You're a new kid on the block with Taylor Martino Rowan, but you've been practicing law a while.
Yeah. I've been practicing law for 11 years. And have been in and out of courtrooms all over South Alabama, really. And but I'm learning a lot. I've been at Taylor Martino Rowan now for a little while, and I feel like a new lawyer again because I'm learning so much.
That's good. Hey, talking about being in courts. I mean, that's, you know, a subject I've talked about with Steve Martino and Richard Taylor and Rowan. That kind of as a firm. They are not. They're not new to a courtroom. Fact that they will try a case,
right? And that's what attracted me to them. Actually, you know, being down at the courthouse, you hear about other lawyers, you see other lawyers, judges talk, lawyers talk, and the names that kept coming up all came from this firm. And
as the people that were in the courtroom.
That's right. As the people that are in the courtroom that are trying cases when they need to be tried. And that is the quality that really stood out to me with them.
So you've with a group of folks that are going to go to the courtroom. You spent time in the courtroom, but I got to back up for a second. You and I were talking about something before you. We went on the air during the news break, and this question came up: Why'd you become an attorney? I thought that was fascinating. I mean, because it's a question I haven't thought about asking. You know, but why? I mean, why?
Well, it's interesting. I think that I became an attorney because I. Saw lawyers, you know, you see lawyers on TV, mm-hmm. and I didn't have a lot of real life experience with lawyers before I went to law school. But I saw these guys and they had qualities like public speaking and mm-hmm. getting up in front of people and presenting cases for their clients. And that is something that I thought that I lacked. And I was terrified. Absolutely terrifying.
You challenge yourself. The one thing that was worrying you challenge yourself.
Right. And I, you know, I went to law school. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do
right.
once I got out, but I knew that I wanted to be in the courtroom and I knew I wanted to be trying cases. And it was totally against my nature. And then when I got out, I got kind of thrown into the fire. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me because once I got thrown in there, you kind of get in a zone, mm-hmm. and you do it enough times where you aren't shaken every time you walk into the courtroom.
Right.
And in fact, you're looking forward to it and you're excited about it. And if you had asked me before, you know, 12 years ago, before I was a lawyer. If I would enjoy that sort of thing, I would say no, but I enjoy it now.
But now I'm talking to you today, and I'm looking at your eyes. You love it.
That's right.
That is, I mean, that's a big part of this too, is y'all are our advocate, and having an advocate that's ready to go to war, not just settle, ready to go to war, is a big thing.
Oh yeah. You've got to have that, you've got to have that at the end of it if you need it. If the case needs to go to trial, the other side and your client, most importantly, needs to know that you're going to go to trial and you're going to fight for them.
You know, this is, and this is, I'm hearing the same thing from you, Joseph, that I've heard from Richard Taylor and Steve Martino and Ed Rowan, that it doesn't always mean you go to trial, but having, knowing, like you said, the reputation down at the courthouse was these guys go to trial.
Right.
And that, and that precedes you. And so, yeah, you don't go every time, but the threat of going to trial probably moves things along.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, it's, it, you don't want to just throw everything away and go to trial just because that's what you do and you start, you know, banging on the walls. But
right.
But you got to have that. If you say, that we're going to go to trial, then you've got to have that to back it up. You've got to actually do it at the end of the day. And I think the guys at Taylor Martino have proven that. And that's really what attracted me to them.
Let's talk about that team, right? So you come into this team, you've got, it's like a full cadre of specialists and people who've been to trial and done that before. I'm not going to get myself in trouble and say how many decades some of them have been doing it, but it's a while, right?
Yeah.
Many decades. What's that like coming into that group?
Well, I think that everybody kind of brings different things to the table. Richard's got his qualities and Steve's got his qualities. Ed's got his qualities. And all the other attorneys have their qualities. And that is what is so, exciting for me, is that when a client calls and, they need help, that I can tell them that it's not just me. We've got, you know, we've got so many years of experience, and if I can't do something the best, somebody in there can do something, can take over and right. help me and guide me. And, that's what they're doing. That
the, all under one roof. Those specialties all under one roof.
Right. And we have attorney meetings and
yeah, you were talking about that before we went on too. Y'all have these attorney meetings. Are y'all, like, if you've got something like, I don't know what to, or what do you think we should do with this? It's going to bounce off like a Richard Taylor or Steve Martino, right? Or Ed Rowan.
Oh yeah. And that's how it goes. It's, if Ed's got something that he's thinking about, he'll say, hey, guys, listen to this. What do y'all think?
Oh, so y'all brainstorm this stuff.
Absolutely. And it's the different perspectives, really help. 'Cause sometimes what happens to me is I'll get hung up on something and get tunnel vision, mm-hmm. And just running it by the other people brings a different perspective and will just illuminate something that you didn't think about before.
It's got to be a good feeling being with a group like that, knowing that you've got that backing you up.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's if folks contact you and you've got this case and they don't just get you, Joseph, they get a whole bunch of y'all.
That's right.
Let's talk about that process too. Somebody wants to get that, you know, because a lot of times people will think, I don't know if I really have a case here. I don't feel comfortable with calling an attorney. You know what I'm talking about. Something's happened. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, most of these situations are stressful for people. And my advice is if you're worried whether or not you have a case or you've got all these thoughts these things happen to people. And in the middle of their regular life. So you've mm-hmm. got all the regular life stuff going on. And so, my advice would be pick up the phone, call us and we'll talk about it. And if we need to move forward with it, we'll move forward with it. But at least, you know, if you pick up the phone and call us.
All right. They need to do that. And you call. You can call for Joseph Dennis, of course. With that, you get the full team at Taylor Martino Browin. I appreciate meeting you, and I can't wait to see you again soon.
Thank you, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right. Attorney Joseph Dennis with Taylor Martino Browin, our guest.
You can contact the Taylor Martino Rowan Law Firm at 251-433-3131 or search online Taylor Martino Rowan.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.
Turn to Alabama Orthopedic Clinic for nagging muscular injuries to major orthopedic surgery and everything in between. Dan Brennan here for prompt, effective treatment with the best technology. Trust AOC's specialist in foot and ankle, hand, sports medicine, joint replacement, spine, general orthopedics, trauma, and pain management. They're easy to find on the I-65 service road at Dauphin Street and their new location in Saraland next to Publix. Go to alortho.com.